Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm your host, Jason Verlinde. I'm sitting here in very rainy Seattle, Washington at Fretboard Journal headquarters. We've got John Rauhaus playing in the background. John has a new record that was just announced. John Rauhaus and Blaine Long, One Day Will Never Come Back. John and Blaine host the Musician's Guide to Everything podcast. Check out their forthcoming record. It's incredible. Pre-order it if you can. I'll include a link in the show notes. Highly recommend it. I got a sneak peek of this thing. And John just played a show here in Seattle, Washington, and it was great to meet so many podcast listeners and folks from the Fretboard Journal community. It was a blast. We're going to have to do more small-scale shows here in Seattle and in LA and New York, and little gatherings. That is part of my 2024 initiative. Part of my 2023 initiative was to have an incredible Fretboard Summit in Chicago at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and we pulled it off. And today on the podcast, you get to hear one of the many cool sessions that took place at the summit. We're talking to EJ Henderson and Wayne Henderson, two incredible guitar makers, father-daughter duo. Elizabeth Jane Henderson, builds guitars and ukuleles in Asheville, North Carolina. Her dad, Wayne, famously builds guitars in Rugby, Virginia. It was great to interview these two. I've known them both for a long time. They played music together, as you will hear, ukulele and guitar combo. We talked about Wayne's very blinged out 500th guitar and a lot more. Like I said, know these two pretty well, but I got to ask them some questions that I've been dying to ask them. And it was just a super cool session with some of my favorite people, which is what the summit is really all about. We are already plotting our 2024 Fretboard Summit. That's going to be August 22nd to 24th, 2024, once again at Chicago's Old Town School of Folk Music. We're going to start selling tickets to that pretty darn soon, like within a week. So stay tuned for that. I'll announce it here on the podcast. The summit actually sold out this year, and it's probably going to sell out again in 2024. So you're going to want to act fast when those tickets are available. Our sponsors for this week's show, Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar, one of the best vintage instrument stores in the world, happens to be here in Seattle, Washington. And if you've never been to their showroom in the Fremont neighborhood, you got to go. And if you don't find yourself in Seattle anytime soon, you're in luck. They have one of the best websites and Instagram feeds around. Follow them. If you're looking for anything unique in the world of electric or acoustic guitars, reach out to them. A truly great store, and it happens to be in my backyard. Peghead Nation is also sponsoring the show once again. You can get $20 off of any annual subscription or your first month free by using the promo code Fretboard when you check out at their incredible music instruction portal. Stringjoy Strings are still offering you all 10% off of your first order at stringjoy.com. All you got to do is use the promo code Fretboard. We just interviewed Scott from Stringjoy about a month ago, and it was one of our most popular downloads in a long time. So a lot of you out there are clearly curious about how strings are made. It's probably obvious to many of you, but new strings can transform your guitar, and Stringjoy are a great option. And we also are brought to you by our friends at iZotope, who are still offering you all 10% off of your order with the discount code FRET10. Just follow the link in the show notes. The 53rd issue of the Fretboard Journal is off to press in just about a week. And so now is the time to let me know if you are a print subscriber and you need to change your address. Please shoot me a note to fretboardjournal@gmail.com with your new address. If you want to get in on the action with this issue, please, now is the time to subscribe. You can just click on the subscribe button on fretboardjournal.com and you will get the next four issues of the journal mailed directly to your home. We will make sure you get a copy. We print in very limited quantities, and when they're gone, they're gone. And if you're still wondering how else you can support the show, we have a Patreon now. We just launched a Patreon a few weeks ago. I'm sharing behind-the-scenes stories. I'm sharing podcasts without the advertising. I'm sharing all sorts of bonus content. We're probably going to start doing virtual happy hours in a month or two. You can hit me up with questions. Maybe I'll share the story of how I got my Henderson guitar. It's a good one. That's all found on our Patreon. The link is in the show notes. And without further ado, here is our Fretboard Summit session with EJ Henderson and Wayne Henderson, two of the greatest acoustic instrument builders you will ever meet. You're going to love their story. Thanks as always for tuning in. Here is our Fretboard Summit session with Wayne and EJ Henderson.
Welcome to the Fretboard Summit. For folks who I haven't said that to, you guys are in for a treat.
We have Wayne Henderson and Jane Henderson here. How many folks have read Clapton's Guitar? Show of hands. Everybody? Almost everybody? Maybe not a couple. Okay, the author is right there, Alan St. John. And I think for a lot of folks who maybe aren't super in the weeds, vintage Martin aficionados, that was sort of our entree to the brilliance and uniqueness of the gentleman sitting right here on stage. If anybody has not read that book, they should. And Wayne's daughter. What? Okay. Yeah. No libraries. Don't bring libraries into this. Is there an audiobook?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. And to make a long story short, as we will hear, Jane has become an incredible luthier in her own right after learning from her father. So we're in for a treat, and you're in for an extra special treat because this is, how many times have you guys played in public together?
Yeah, we do Merlefest a lot, but other than that,
okay.
Five.
Five, all right.
No, this we is do a some, rare, sometimes.
Your Illinois debut, though.
Oh, yeah, never.
Okay,
never.
There we go. Let's hear you guys play, and then we're going to grill you about the instruments you have and your build process and a whole bunch of fun stuff. And the capo.
I will play one. Please know I'm not a builder. I'm a builder. I'm not a player. That's what I need to say about that.
That capo is almost a bigger story then. Am I in the right place?
We're doing F.
Yeah. I guess if we play a tune, I'll do Freight Train.
All right. I'll do the one.
Okay. We'll just try to pick that for you.
Just sit in this chair. Okay. This is for a tall person. This chair.
You ready to pick?
Yeah.
I could just hear you play music for the whole session, but
that would not be ideal.
Okay,
you would lose
Wayne,
the crowd.
I think Wayne will be playing across the street this evening. Yes. Hopefully, you are at the Summit Shorts, which will be across the street in Zold. But why don't we just start with talking about the instruments that are you brought here today? Because I know they probably both have a great story.
Well, this one, it's actually number 500. I work in just a tiny little small shop back in Rugby, Virginia, there where the population ain't but seven. And I get nervous when I see a crowd this big, you know.
Yeah.
But
same.
Anyway, it's just a tiny little shop, and I've made guitars for 60 years, and I guess a little longer, because I used to have made them that long since I put a serial number in one. And that is, I think, in 1964. And I made them out of cardboard boxes and stuff like that before. And was over at my mom's old place. Had some folks there videoing for some kind of documentary or something here while just a few weeks ago. And went over to my mom's old place, and they found some of my school notebooks, my geometry class book, you know, that barely got through school, you know, everything. But in the margins of that book from my grade school or whatever it was full of brace patterns.
Wow.
You know, I'd never even seen the inside of a Martin or a guitar, but I could look at Mr. Ball's Martin, and I could see that X down in there. And I knew that all those braces were important back in there, you know. And but I had no idea how they went. But I was guessing at it. I would look in the margins of my little notebooks. Every last one of them, a few of them had drawings
guns.
Of Winchester rifles. But something else is important to us kids in the mountain. You know, we went hunting all the time. But
Daddy, I want to say one thing about those notebooks, though, is that I feel like I don't have all that much in common with my dad, you know. We're both short, but other than that. But one thing I used to do, my notebooks looked exactly like that, not guitar, but I would always have really intricate drawings in my notebooks. I'm like, oh, I'm like my dad. Like, we would listen, and it was nice. Those notebooks were so cool. It was so neat to see. Yeah. Also, he drew every single, the patience he has, the wound string, he drew every little wind on a wound string on the E.
Incredible.
So I'd forgotten about that stuff that we found those old notebooks the other day, because I've evidently always had guitar making on my mind. And you know, some of the very first ones I tell a story sometimes about when I was really trying to make a guitar, and I wondered how in the world I could bend that wood. You know, there wasn't guitar builders everywhere, you know, back in, you know, 60 years ago. And had no chance to see anybody that actually made the instruments or anything. But I knew those sides had to be bent somehow. Mm-hmm. And I looked and I found my mom's dresser drawer bottom had a walnut veneer on it. And that was thin, and it did come loose a little ways, and I could bend it. But boy, if I could get that stuff off of there, you know, I might could bend my sides, you know. So when she wasn't looking, I slipped that bottom out of her dresser drawer, laid it out in the branch, a little creek that went down behind the house, and left it out there all night. And the next morning, I went there and looked, and sure enough, that stuff had soaked loose and was down the creek a ways, you know. And I got that out and dried it off and dried the rest of her drawer bottom off and put it back in there, and she never ever knew a thing about it. And never missed it being gone. But I actually did take that that old veneer and started shaping it. And the only glue I had, I'd seen my dad put weather stripping on his truck doors with some kind of black rubber stuff, you know. And so that's what I put it together with. I'd worked my whole summer vacation and had it out in a outbuilding, because people would have thought you was off in the head a little bit if you're trying to make a guitar back in those days around home there anyway. And we're supposed to be farming and making stuff for the farm. I got that thing almost plumb done. I had a cool fingerboard. I didn't have any idea I could measure the fret spacing off of EC's Martin, you know. Yeah. And I had that.
Who's EC?
And EC Ball was an old folk player he actually made at least two records for Rounder Company, and he played gospel music. Mm-hmm. Was a great thumb picker, finger picker type guy, and wonderful player. I wish he'd have gotten more famous than he did, but He's like me. He stayed in that little town of seven people. He didn't get out too far. But great, great musician. But anyway, his old guitar, I could learn a little. He let me draw around the outside of it. So I knew, but he was so particular with it, he wouldn't let me take the strings off and feel in there where the braces went or anything. But anyway, that fingerboard I sawed and hammered out copper wire and drove them in there and filed them all flat and round them. I had a pretty fingerboard, and it was essentially bar frets. What would have been an old Martin anyway, but just without ever seeing one. That was just obviously what you do. And so I got that guitar, almost done. It's laying there, and my dad, I went out there, got August this time of year, got a little bit, not like here, like it was yesterday. But that would have melted anything. But anyway, it got August and humid and heat set in on where I had my guitar laying out in an outbuilding out there. And I went out there one day, and that thing had, that old rubber glue had turned loose, and that walnut veneer still had spring, and that thing had blossomed like a morning glory. It spread out all over the table. And my dad could tell there was something wrong with me, and finally I told him I'd been trying to make a guitar. And he said, well, my dad was an old-time musician, played fiddle, and there was an old fella lived pretty close by that a fella named Albert Hash that worked on fiddles because my dad had him work on his fiddle. And he had took his fiddle to him to fix, and he said, next time it rains and we can't work on the farm, I'll take you over to Albert. He'd probably at least tell you what kind of glue to use, to glue it together. And he did. I went to see Albert, and it was a shock to me that he pulled out a fiddle that he hadn't had out of the drawer in 20 years, and he'd quit playing and stuff. But he got that out, and it's an absolute gorgeous carving job on this fiddle made out of beautiful curly maple. And it made me realize somebody's hands could make something like that. And so I went. He gave me an old mahogany door. It was Luan mahogany, just inside, just plywood. Wasn't very good wood, but he said, this is mahogany, son. Said, that's the same thing a Martin's made out of. And that just about drove me nuts, And he gave me a big old slab of it and told me how to bend it over a hot pipe. And so I probably spent another year trying to make that guitar. And when I got it done, of course, I didn't want it to, it don't sound too good. I braced it like a tank because I was afraid it would come apart like my other did. Mm-hmm. But he told me what kind of glue to use. And I still have that guitar. Amazing. It's got a number one in it. So that's sort of how I got started making them,
And, all right. And now you made this.
Yeah. Well, let's get to that later. I want to hear your number one instrument story since we're on the auspicious debut front.
I technically have a number. Well, so my number one with my name on it is sort of different than the first one I built because I went to environmental law school, which cost a lot of money. And I asked, I was like, well, Dad, his guitars sell for like $20,000. I was like, can I have a guitar so that I can make, pay back my school loans? And he said, I'll give you, whatever you can sell that guitar for, I'll give it to you, but you have to be in here and do the work and you have to come in here every single day. And I was like, God, that's going to suck. I had no interest because, I've always wanted to hang out with my dad, but I never really got to because all of you guys were always there, which is fine, but that's just how it was. And so I really wanted no part in like the shop or the building. I wanted, my daddy, not Wayne Henderson. I wanted my dad. And so occasionally I could get him out of the shop, but not much. And so I just thought, I was like, well, fine, I'll do it and it'll be terrible. But so whatever, I get the payday, I'll do it. So I went and I started to realize and understand why this meant so much to him and why it was such a special thing and how effing exciting it is to build something with your hands. Look what you have. And I just fell in love with it. And it wasn't necessarily the building. I got to hang out with my dad and have a relationship with him, which meant so much more. So I kept tricking. I made $25,000 on that first one. So technically I didn't really make that though, because he was like, you know, here are some braces, glue them on. Here's the, and then I was like, well, can I make another one? And I kept trying to make more and more as I mean, the money was good, but the relationship with my dad was better. So, I kept like tricking my environmental nonprofit that I was working for to let me off to come build another one. I was like, hey, I'll give you all the money if you just let me go build a guitar. And my husband one day was like, well, your face when you talk about this, and like, it's obvious you love doing that. Why don't you just go do that? So, my first one with my name on it that I wanted, you know, I wanted it to be me, not just him, not just a Henderson. I wanted a Jane Henderson. So I made it out of sustainable materials, environmentally friendly things. I made it out of walnut and stuff that came from right nearby. Mm-hmm. And that was the first one with my name on it. And I've always loved the inlay part, as the folks who came to that talk earlier mm-hmm. might know already. But I just, that's the part I gravitate towards, is the art and the looking, making things sparkly and pretty. I mean, obviously I like sparkly things. So,
yeah.
When I was really young, the little time I could get with my dad would be like, hey, can you help me make something in the shop? You know, and I would always hope to put something glittery on it. Like, well, what can we inlay? Yeah. So, that's what happened, is my first one was technically his, but then after that, I just got so into it and at least 50, if not significantly more percent of that enjoyment is just getting to know my dad, but having a tangible evidence of what I've done and getting to make something really pretty for somebody to make somebody really happy is what I do it for. I'm not a good player, as you may have heard. But I love the building. I love the process, and I love meeting each one of you guys, and I get to make so many friends. I love that part. So that's why I do it. And then that's what happened, is why I made that instrument. And then this is number 60.
Yeah.
And this wood came from a friend in Hawaii. I've made some friends with some amateur ukulele builders, on Maui, Kauai, and the Big Island. And they invited me out to teach them inlay. Like, this Paul sent me an email. It was like, hey, if we fly you out to Hawaii, we'll let you stay. You know, you can stay I have a guest house. You can stay there. We'll give you a car. You can stay for 8 days, and you want to teach maybe one or two of those days in February. I'm like, is this some kind of trick question? Yes, I will. So, but they don't have red spruce. They don't have Brazilian. I'm like, well, I got some of that out. So we trade, and I got this, pretty cool koa. That came from my friend Edmund, who cut it down himself. Wow. He showed me all of the places. He's like, oh, like, we'd lurch to a stop. We were driving the road to Hana, and he'd like lurch to a stop. You're like, I cut a piece of koa right over there. I cut that tree. I'm like, oh my God, dude. But it was very beautiful and very exciting. Edmund is like the Hawaiian Wayne.
Okay.
So funny. He's like this little man who's so into ukulele building and wood, and his shop is just as messy and full of stuff. It made me feel like home. I walked in and I'm like, oh, I'm not too far from home. And another super quick, which is unimportant, is my granny used to make daddy shirts out of like corn bags and flour bags. And his mom made him shirts out of like rice bags, and where, you know, it was just cute. I'm like, oh, it's like the same so far, but the same. Yeah. Anyway, so now I have this.
And just to be clear, Jane now has her own fully equipped facility in Asheville.
Yeah, come see me.
And
I don't have any loafers. I do. One thing I do is on Saturday or Sunday, depending on when Matilda, my kid, will let me, at 2 o'clock, I do a Facebook Live.
Yeah.
And so I just sit and you help me work. You can come talk to me, send me messages. I love to have people talk to me. So those are my loafers. I get to have people come hang out. You don't have to go that far. So
yeah,
and you don't have to wear pants. I don't care. So please.
How many instruments are you up to, and what's the divide between ukes and guitars right now?
I have been really working on making it back even. So I've been working on a bunch of ukuleles lately. They're my favorite to make because my hand is this big. Don't ask me to make a dreadnought. I don't like it, and I can't do it really. So I love these little ones because look, I can hold them. and they're my size. So I make, but I'm about at 86 or 87 of each.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay. almost to 100 of each, which is pretty exciting. Nowhere near my dad's. I'm about to get number. I'm gonna throw you. I'll be really jealous. I'm gonna get number 900.
Yeah. So Wayne, I am the lucky owner of 517, which is from 2010, same year as when my son was born, and hopefully he'll get that. That's number 500, so I'm guessing it's around that same 2010. Yeah. You're up to 900 and how many?
901 right now.
You build more instruments than so many luthiers who have all these CNC machines. And what Jane said about all the loafers, many of whom might be here, you do this with an audience. I don't even know how you do it. When do you make all these instruments?
Well,
I think there's a decent bump around COVID. I will say, no kidding. There was a decent bump during COVID when could just work. Yeah, but
during all this COVID mess, I missed my loafers. I didn't have any, but I did get an awful lot of work done. I just have a tiny shop, and I've got everything laid out. And if I work, I concentrate on what I'm doing. And seem like a guitar that, like a not a fancy one like this, but a normal guitar. If I build it in 3 or 4 days, it almost seems like it's my best ones.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm concentrating on every piece. And like this guitar, since it's number 500, the one I was going to keep, it built about when yours was, but I laid it up in my shelf, and I'd do a little to it once in a while, when I wasn't doing something else. And it took like 10 years for me to get it totally done.
You had to wait
done.
Just as long as everybody else.
And I mean, I had to wait 10 years to get my guitar too. And my buddy Don, who was always a help around the shop, and he passed away a couple of years ago, but he was a genius mechanic and kept my machinery working good, and I've missed him something awful since he's gone. But
I have to watch a lot of YouTube to help these days.
He did build this capo for me. He said he always fussed at me to finish this number 500 guitar. And he said, I made you a fancy capo, but I ain't giving it to you till you finish that guitar. Yeah. And so I thought about that a little bit, and every once in a while, but I didn't actually realize what he was doing. He was a genius mechanic and stuff, and could figure out how to do anything, I think. And he figured out how to cast, like jewelry casting, lost wax stuff. And he built this capo out of, his daughter told me that he got every piece of jewelry that she had, her rings and stuff, and a couple of watch cases and a few coins. And that capo is made out of solid gold. And he also put two little tiny Allen screws through it so I can't get it off.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he knew I would let somebody borrow it or even leave it on somebody's guitar or just leave it laying around, but I can't get the thing.
Where'd that
off.
Diamond so come from?
Yeah, there's in the back, little ivory button there has a pretty good sized diamond in the. So that's. It's at least got to be the fanciest capo in rugby anyway.
This stage is very valuable right now.
And I mean, there's endangered species all over this that I didn't go out and shoot an elephant or even promote that in any way. That old elephant that bridge is made out of was in the Richmond Zoo, Richmond, Virginia Zoo, and he died of old age. And they buried him in a park close by there somewhere, and they had some worker with a backhoe there doing excavating and digging, and accidentally got where they buried that elephant and dug that skull up, and it still had those two tusks in it there that long. And he felt sure he had found a dinosaur or a woolly mammoth or something like that, because that skull was still there and had those tusks in it, and called in the authorities. And luckily, one of the guys that got called in is from a newspaper that I'd actually built a guitar for one time. And he said, and he also knew the story about the elephant. He said, "You ain't found no dinosaur. That's an elephant that's in the zoo. We buried him right here 20-some years ago." And and said, I bet I know somebody would probably like to have that tusk. Mm-hmm. One of them fell out, you know, while he's doing that. And he got it and gave it to me. And I made this and bunches of other stuff, you know, nets and saddles. And
I think I, on the other good, I have two ukuleles that I keep. And the other one has, actually, it has the nut and saddle are from the Richmond Zoo, but then the bridge is from this really scary statue that a friend gave us. Yeah. And he was this far. I think that statue came from Africa. It was our friend Dovey, was her family when she was young, was hosting an exchange student. And as a thank from Peru, I think, and the dad worked in Africa or something. But as a thank you, he gave her family this heinous statue.
Yeah, it was scary. Like,
it was really.
I was glad to stick that thing in the bandsaw.
You were about. He was about this far. I remember. I have just this vivid memory of you being right here, like this far from. You're like, you think any haints are gonna come get us if we do this? I'm like, not me. I'm not doing it. I'm watching you. I'm not touching that. So I don't know. I guess I don't know if that's happened or not. Yeah, it was. She said she had to put it up in her closet because it was scaring her grandson. So she's like, "Well, there's no point to keep it." Yeah. So we made a bunch of stuff out of it.
I think better off than guitar.
Yeah, better off as a. I'm having a lovely pyramid bridge for my ukulele.
Wow, upcycling.
Though George Gruen yelled at me about it, I could never sell this in my store. Like, well, it's not for sale.
He was not happy about it. That stuff is still illegal, even though you've got paperwork with it and things like that. But I think when you fashion that pick guard or a flat pick out of an old tray that was 100 and some years old, you know, that's all legal and everything. But once you fashion that pick or pick guard, you can't prove where it's been or where it come from.
Yeah.
I reckon that's the reason they have such rules about it. I mean, they've got all this stuff on here. Nobody's come get it yet, but they
might.
Right
now. But there's so many lovely things that you can use that aren't an endangered species. Yeah. Come see me. I'll help you out.
You guys are the yin and yang of guitar making right here.
Like, let me just...
I want to get to your workshops and your setups and how, Jane, you've differed from your dad's setup in Asheville. But before we get to that, I just got to ask... So, like, Fretboard Summit 2024, will we see Guitar 1000, and will it even be blingier than this?
I made it for 1000.
No, mine's 900.
Oh, I don't know.
That'll be next month.
I'm 76 years old, and I really would really hope to get to number 1000, mm-hmm. but you know, if I do, I'll have to make something fancy, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
Go the other way.
Yeah. Well, that 900's a 217.
Okay.
So yeah, it's full body koa, but it's.
Close people that I make stuff for seem like don't want fancy stuff.
Well, yeah. Helen didn't want it. She has 700. Matilda has 800.
Okay.
And I got 900.
Okay.
Matilda's has a really cool. I took pictures, and that was in that inlay thing too. But I put my dad's, I have number 123. When I got for Christmas when I was 8, and Kathy Fink, one of our good friends, mm-hmm. gave my daughter this crap guitar, the plastic, because she was like,
It's purple.
And Matilda loves purple. But she was like, I was like, she's got enough guitars. And she's like, I watched you drag that Truman Capote Brazilian Rosewood up the back stairs at Augusta, and it broke my heart. Just let her play with this one. Don't give her anything too fancy, you know. But it is, she loves that horrible guitar. But I did the inlay. So Daddy's, my number 123 that he gave me is the only one that has heart inlays for the fingerboard. It's a like 28 style 5, which is pretty cool. But then, so Matilda's, I did an inlay. I filled it out a bit, but there, it's all hearts on the fret markers as well. So we've got a couple that have
yours
hearts.
Is also made out of cool wood, and there's a little piece on there.
That's true. Mine is made out of the bar of Truman Capote's yacht, the Brazilian rosewood that came out of Truman Capote's yacht on the bar, which, gosh, what stories. I wish it could talk. But then, and Matilda's has it on the headstock, and I have a piece of it. The last little bit of 900 has a heart made out of it. So, yep. And I've got heart fret markers that I made for the 900, but it's just super simple little hearts.
Jane, you hinted at how you have different philosophies when it comes to wood and sustainability. When you went about creating your own shop, mm-hmm. Your dad's shop is kind of famous or infamous for being pretty primitive in terms of tooling.
True.
And not the most orderly some of the time.
That's a very nice way of
putting yeah. it. So what is your shop like, and how did you differ?
Okay. I like to have things clean, and I had that dang kid, and productivity and cleanliness have both tanked a bit, but I do my best to keep things a lot cleaner. I like dust collectors.
Yeah.
I'll vacuum and get everything clean before and after a project, you know, make sure that I have everything kind of orderly. And, I have a CNC machine.
You do.
It works okay. I use it some. Mm-hmm. As I was saying in my inlay thing, I'll cut the pocket, but it takes me so long to figure out how to get the thing programmed that I could just do it myself, mm-hmm. like cut it, you know, by hand. So for me, I really take a lot of what he's taught me, and I'm proud that I don't need a bunch of newfangled stuff. Yeah, I don't use a pocket knife as adeptly, but I I try, and I have all it, you know, the case, like all his little case pocket knives. I have a pink polka dotted one. Mm. I've got a purple one. Anything that's purple, sparkly pink, send it my way. I love a good case pocket knife that's small, that fits my hand. But I'm really proud though. Like, yes, there are a few things that I have a little bit fancier of, but not really, because I'm so proud that he taught me how to make a really good instrument with not much. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep doing that. The things that I have adapted to make more my own that's not his would be the sustainability stuff. Is like, let's just be thoughtful about where we're sourcing our stuff. And not that he isn't, yeah. you know, he went to actual Brazil and got Brazilian rosewood that had been reclaimed, you know. Yeah. But for me, I think because of how he taught me how to build a really good guitar, I can build one out of oak and it can sound really good.
Sounds good as anything.
Yeah. Because you taught me how to build a really good instrument. I know how to make a brace. I know how to stand something. I know how to get the, you know, listen for the right tone. And that's really all you need. So I don't know. That's there's really not much difference. Yeah. I even put all of my, you know, I have my little tool thing, like the stand where you put your workbench on top, but underneath it. But I made sure I put all of my files in the same spot where he has his, and I have all of my everything in the same spots, because I don't know, I'm sentimental and weird, but but also it's nice because then I know where to find it. Uh-huh. I'm already reaching there anyway. I have a couple, I guess maybe two of his bandsaws have a switch, and my saw stop is different. And I'm like over there trying to push it, and it's not doing because it's a light switch. His is on. So those are different things. Mm-hmm. I'm just used to pushing things differently, but there's
cool.
really little differences.
I had to nick
got it. Luckily he got thumb. A saw stop.
I had to nick my thumb with my table saw one day. I was worried a little bit about just getting older and reflexes not as good or something, but I had to make a pretty good little cut in the end of my thumb there before I would really break down and go get a saw like she's got, one of those saw stops.
They're lovely.
I've certainly never tried it, but they say
absolutely
put a hot dog
right.
in that thing and that blade disappears before it even scratches it.
Yeah.
They evidently work.
I've heard that. I'm terrified to try mine as well. I'm not going to give it a shot, and I'm going to act like I don't have it. You know,
but that's something I would recommend anybody
yes.
get.
any builders in here, please get a saw stop if you like your fingers.
You mentioned oak a few times, Jane. Is that like your favorite of the sustainable woods right now?
My favorite is walnut. I think I've always gravitated towards walnut. Yeah. But the story behind that is it was the first board that I bought that I went to the wood store, you know, as you do. I went to my friend Peter's like mill or whatever. And I was looking around and I'm like, oh, I know that's quarter sawn. And I was, you know, it was many, many years ago now, and I hadn't seen enough to really know, but I was like, okay, I know this one is quarter sound. I know. And I tapped on it. It rings. I know that it would make a good guitar. And I called my dad, can I buy this? He said, well, I reckon. And so I did, and I brought it, to his shop, and he sawed it up for me and made beautiful sets. It has this amazing figure. And he made a guitar with it, and I made a guitar for Doc Watson with it. And I asked Doc, I was like, can I make this? Would you mind if I made it out of oak? Like, honey, you do whatever you want. I'm going to love it, and you make whatever you want. I'm going to love that oak. I'm like, okay. He passed away a little bit before I got it finished. I remember we showed him the body. There's a picture of him. He felt it and everything, but he didn't, it must have tapped on it, but he didn't get to have the final product. But it's a really good guitar. I don't know if it has special Doc Mojo in it or not, but it's a lovely guitar. And I love when somebody will come to my dad's shop and say, oak's not a tone wood. I say, okay, come here. And I let them see it, and they do one strum, and watching their face change, and they have to, even if they cover it up really quick, there's always that that astonished for a second before they check themselves and go, well, it's okay. But a lot of times people have to eat their words. They're like, actually, that's a really good guitar. And it's just made out of a simple wood that is floor.
Pretty cool. How about what you said when you saw in the dovetail to fit?
That was the day Doc died. Doc passed away that day. And I don't know how many of you guys have made a dovetail joint, but it is not the easiest of tasks. And oftentimes it takes some finagling to get it to fit in there just right. And that day, Doc died that day. And it was the only dovetail I have ever cut. And I slid it in there and I didn't have to do a thing to it. I didn't have to sand it. I didn't have to because there's three angles. There are three different angles on the dovetail joint that you have to be very careful with and have to be super precise. And each one of them was perfect.
We thought he had something to do with it.
I had a feeling. I was like, I think Doc helped me that day.
I love it.
Yep.
Doc was a great worker himself. Even though he couldn't see, he could do stuff like put a bottom in a chair with that herringbone pattern about as nice as anybody I've ever seen.
He made it. We have a chair that he was out. You take it home and cane it for you. And he did. We have chair that Doc caned, but then my kid Matilda, she's three now, she turned three a week ago, she has a tower, a little thing to help me in the kitchen at my house, but she doesn't have one at Papa's house. She stands on that dang chair. I'm like, oh my God, Doc's gonna be so mad. But it's the most stable. It's like the best one. Everything else is probably gonna fall over, fall through it.
Sit on it all the time.
Yeah, we do. But Matilda, probably. I know, I think about that. I'm like, should I let her stand on this thing and help me make whatever pancakes, whatever we're doing. But we do. But it's the same. You know what I think? It's the same as having a precious instrument. If you don't use it and love it, what's the point of it?
Yeah.
You know, I always say that people get so worried about scratching, can you fix this? No. That means that you loved it or you fell over and tripped or whatever, but it was still out and you were, that's the history. We have scars on our bodies from living, from having experiences. And I love that we get, our instruments have those as well. So no, I think we should love that. We should love it and use it because that's what Doc wanted. And I want you to take an instrument that one of us makes and love it and use it because that's the point of it. It's not to be hung up or stuffed under a bed or whatever. You love it and appreciate it. And each little scar or ding is just evidence of that.
Yeah. Wayne, you have one of the most legendary, there's no rhyme or reason as to how people get your guitars. I'll just put it that way. It's not as simple as placing an order as it would be for a lot of these guitar makers here. You have to work at it. You have to know Wayne. It's a process. Jane, you have probably a little more organized system. Okay.
I do my best. But so what I do is I have a list where I act, if someone comes to me and says, I'd love to have a guitar from you, I say, okay, well, I'll add you to my list. I have a list, so I know when you asked for it. But I open my books every December. And if you want a guitar, you want to, you know, pay for it, you're ready for me to get it to you that year, then contact me in that December. And then I have 10 spots open. That's probably the best I can do. I mean, with that little kid. So then if you've been waiting the longest, you know, and you're in touch, and then I know that because I remember, oh, you asked in 2015. Okay. I guess I better get on it. Then I slot you in that year. So it's more, I don't like to take deposits until I'm ready to actually do it. Mm-hmm. So I'll take deposits for that year, but I won't, you know, but it's like, look, okay, I have this many instruments. We'll chat and you are definitely getting a guitar this year. But if I don't hear from you, I'll send an email out every December saying like, hey, books are open. You want one? Let me know. And then we will, you know, so that way I feel more it's on the client too.
Yeah.
Because when I was just going down the list, you know, I'd be like, hey, you want your guitar? I wouldn't hear from some of them, you know, cause they would be, get their guitar from somebody else or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So like the demand, I can't keep up with my demand and neither can he, obviously. Yeah. But that way I can, at least it's more of an equal playing field where if you want one, come to me in December. If I have a spot open, if you've been waiting for, like I have a guy in Korea and he's like, hey, I've been waiting since 2014. I'm like, oh shit. Yep. You have. Well, I'll get it done. He's like, I'm going to come. I'm coming to the US. I'm like, that's perfect. So he came and picked one up. He ordered two. So I'm going to take him one, next year, I think. But that way he came, and picked his up. And I'm like, well, okay, we'll get it ready. I know you're coming this time. I'll make sure to have it done then. So that worked well, but you know, having constraints that way sort of helps me. And because I don't like to take people's money, or I don't like to feel obligated unless I have something I can give.
Yeah.
So that's how I like to make it happen. Yeah. That way is
terrible business person myself.
Oh, you're doing great. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, and the other thing is, just so you know, asking me to ask him has no effect. Maybe if you asked Matilda to ask him, that's the only person I know who actually does, you know, have an effect on what Wayne wants. But I've tried.
Sure.
Too. It doesn't, don't ask me. He will not. He makes exactly what he wants when he wants to do it.
I don't especially do it for Manny too much. I make these things because I really love doing it. I get as much excitement out of making number 900 as I did number 2. And it just, that's what I get out of more than anything else. But you know, you have to charge folks for material and stuff.
Of course. I have to charge people because I got a kid and I live in Asheville.
She's got to make a living doing it. And I don't really, but I still make them. I wish everybody that wanted one had them, you know. I mean, I feel bad about not being able to get somebody's guitar done. But if they keep, I tell them, you just keep calling, you check in, you call them, let them remember who you are. And sometimes that works. And sometimes if you've got if you've got a nice old guitar that I don't have in my collection, that you're willing to trade for one.
Sure.
That works sometimes, or a nice old LC Smith shotgun or any kind of antique something, you know, and think something I don't have or can't get. I'm always happy to.
I used to
trade a guitar.
I used to not understand. It used to really irk me when he would make multiples for annoying people. Like the more, you know, I'm like, that, why are you rewarding bad behavior? But now I do understand better, because the folks who really do take their time to send me a message regularly or say like, hey, I really want to make that for you, because I know you really want it. And so I get it. I get it more now.
For me, somebody keep calling me. I tell them, keep checking in. And we run out of time.
Yeah, we almost are, but keep talking. Okay. sorry, but I ruined the mood.
No, I don't have my watcher.
We're cutting. Okay. So this is amazing that we got Wayne here. I'm really excited. And Jane. Speaking of trades.
I'm very, very glad to be here and appreciate you having a few. arrange that to me. I got to do with Wrigley Field this morning. Yeah. That was
so the trade thing that Wayne was talking about, it works for even getting him to Chicago. We got him a private tour of Wrigley Field this morning. So that was how we sweet talked him here. Wayne is going to be playing tonight across the street. So everybody go try to see that if you can, or just literally walk around and hear him picking with some of these local or not so local people. There's some incredible talent here. Norman Blake's guitar is somewhere around.
Oh yeah.
Century of Progress. Can we hear one more tune before we have to clear the stage?
What's got the least number of chords? I'll do it.
Play one. Leather Bridges, that just got one chord.
I can do that. It's got D and a G, right?
Yep. Just a little D.
All right. It starts with G. Okay.
Appreciate y'all listening to our stuff.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. I love seeing both of these individuals. I hope they'll come back to the 2024 Summit. Wayne was playing at this year's Summit with all sorts of people. It was so cool to just see him jamming with pretty much everyone. My dream. It was really my dream guitar weekend, and I bet it'll be yours too if you come again August 22nd to 24th, 2024 for the 2024 Fretboard Summit.